afternoon, everybody. We're going to get our next panel started. It's entitled Accelerated Switching Timeframes. And I'd like to first start with our first presenter, Mr. Richie Hudson, who is the state chairman for the Retail Energy Supply Association.
Thank you, Chairman Powelson and members of the commission. This issue is near and dear to my heart because I'm a very demanding consumer in my day-to-day life outside of work. And I've often been very frustrated with the current status quo in the electric industry, that it takes so long to honor a customer's selection of their EGS. As the commission is well aware, it currently takes from 16 to 45 days, 1 to 2 billing cycles for a customer's electric service to be switched to their EGS. And this is driven by two primary factors. One is the fact that a switch can only happen on a customer's scheduled meter read date. And the other reason is that under the current rules in Pennsylvania, there is a mandatory 16-day waiting period for all enrollments. And that waiting period exists to accommodate a mandatory 10-day notice letter that each of the utilities will send to customers to confirm their EGS selection. RESA strongly recommends that this process can and should be improved to facilitate faster switching. Put very simply, this is a customer service issue. I recently refinanced a house, and it's the Pittsburgh market, not terribly expensive real estate, a couple $100,000 home, and I was able to go through that process in a shorter time frame than it takes to switch a electric service here in Pennsylvania. And similarly, I recently switched cell phone service providers. Actually, it's the same service provider, but they had to give me a new account because I was changing rate plans. And I walked into the local T-Mobile store, and they went through all the machinations in their systems, and it only had an interruption of service for about 1 hour, and my new service was up and running on a brand new smartphone. This is the kind of customer service that we should be striving for in the restructured electric market, and we can accomplish it. Our recommendation, first and foremost, is to eliminate the 10-day notice period. We understand the original intent behind that notice period was to prevent instances of unauthorized switching, or what's otherwise known as slamming. But we feel it's inappropriate to require millions of customers to wait to have their service initiated with their chosen supplier to accommodate a very, very small fraction of instances where there's an intentional or an unintentional unauthorized switch. Necessary customer protections can and should be maintained, and in fact, in submitting this recommendation to accelerate the switching time frame and eliminate the 10-day notice period, RESA actually put forward a recommendation to the Retail Markets Investigation to adopt an accelerated complaint resolution process that could be overseen by the Commission to deal with instances of unauthorized switches. It's also important to note that even with the mandatory 10-day letter and the 16-day waiting period, accidents occur even in today's marketplace. So ultimately, as I mentioned, this is about ensuring faster, more expeditious customer service, honoring a customer's EGS selection so they can take service sooner with their chosen EGS. And as has been mentioned earlier, while not the only reason customers are switching, one of the primary drivers is the opportunity for savings. So every day that a customer is forced to wait to have their supplier selection decision implemented is another day of lost savings for those customers that have chosen a cheaper electric service product from their supplier. So that covers most of the remarks that I wanted to make today, and I'll be happy to answer any questions at the end of the panel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next presenter is Ms. Andrea Williams, Senior Director of Regulatory Strategy and Policy for NRG Energy. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
As you may know, NRG owns three retail companies actively participating in the Pennsylvania market, Reliant, Green Mountain, and Energy Plus, with a variety of value propositions to serve customers. Going to what Richie just mentioned, one of the things that we think is imperative to address is this misnomer that customer protections cannot be harmonized with accelerating the switching timelines. That, in fact, is not the case. As all of us suppliers well recognize, our license is our livelihood, and we have the same inherent goal to comply with all of those requirements that we do today under the longer time leads. So it's not about trying to impair in any way ensuring that we have the affirmative consent of the customer before we make that switch. This is purely a matter of enabling those customers to receive the benefits associated with their choice in a timely fashion, whatever those benefits may be. Maybe they're savings, maybe they're the conscious decision to support a renewable initiative and seeing that more closely aligned with when they've made the choice. Maybe it's miles and they're looking forward to their next family vacation and utilizing those. So it's imperative that we more closely align the decision with the benefit. The sooner the better. I'm similar to Richie in that respect. Most consumers generally want it, and they want it now or yesterday. In addition, minimizing the customer confusion that we have today with the longer lead times is important. I think that to a certain extent, we're getting a little bit of some negative publicity with those customers that have chosen to choose, and then you wait and you wait. And we have certainly experienced in our retail companies customers thinking they did something wrong. I made the selection. What did I do wrong? It's been a bill. It's been two bills. Maybe it wasn't important. Maybe the utility didn't like what I did. There's any variety of things that are adding to confusion. So similar to the prior panel, educating consumers about their choice and honoring the choice that they made are some of the primary benefits associated with switching. And all of this can be done under the guise of protecting them and ensuring that their affirmative consent is made and this choice that they want. It's about delivering benefits, whatever those may be, monetary or otherwise, more expeditiously to the customers, and that will only go to further ensure that more customers have an incentive to participate in the market. I look forward to any questions you may have.
Thank you. And it's now my pleasure to introduce Tanya McCluskey, Senior Assistant Consumer Advocate for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Welcome, Tanya.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you for the opportunity to present on this panel. Since the inception of retail choice in Pennsylvania, processes have been put in place to ensure that when a customer's generation supplier is changed, that change is a result of the choice by the customer. Section 2807D1 of the Electric Generation Customer Choice and Competition Act requires the Commission to ensure that a customer's supplier is not changed without the customer's consent. The Commission established regulations to meet this obligation. The Commission has also been clear that it has a zero-tolerance policy when it comes to slamming, that is, switching the customer's generation supplier without consent. At the heart of the Commission's regulations and processes is what has become known as the confirmation letter. This letter is sent from the EDC to the customer and notifies the customer of the proposed change in service. The confirmation letter provides a 10-day period when the customer can contact the EDC if this was not their choice. The OCA continues to support the confirmation letter process and submits that this process takes on even greater importance as the Commission considers other competitive enhancements such as referral programs and opt-in aggregation auctions. The typical time period for switching a supplier is between 16 and 45 days in Pennsylvania. This timeline results from a variety of reasons, from meter read procedures to billing procedures to EGS enrollment procedures to the Commission regulations. The OCA supports the work of the Commission to try to shorten this time frame. Customers that have to wait a long time to see the results of their switching decision can become frustrated with the process. With the quarterly changes to the default service rate, customers may actually lose the benefit of the bargain that they thought they had if there is a delay in their new service until after the next price change. There are several steps that can be taken, both in the short term and in the long term, to try to shorten this switching time frame. In the OCA's view, one of those steps should not be the elimination of the confirmation letter. The confirmation letter has brought great credibility to the process of switching suppliers, and has helped to ensure that customers are only being changed to a new supplier with their consent. The confirmation letter allows any mistakes or improper switches to be caught before a customer is billed under a new set of charges. Undoing the results of an improper switch can be time-consuming and costly for the customer, for the EDC, and for the EGS, and it will certainly leave a bad impression of retail choice. There are changes and improvements in the confirmation letter and the process that could be undertaken without undermining the credibility of the confirmation process. The OCA agrees that it may be reasonable to shorten the 10-day confirmation period to a 5-day period. Care must be taken, though, that the 5-day period is not compromised by the mailing process. The insertion of a date certain in the letter for canceling the switch may also assist customers in timely responding to the confirmation letter. The OCA would also support electronic delivery of the confirmation letter to those customers that have previously agreed to electronic billing and/or electronic receipt of EDC notices. Customers using electronic billing and receiving electronic notices are growing in numbers, and accommodating their desire for the electronic notice should cut down on the processing time. The OCA urges the continued use of the confirmation letter to continue the credibility that has been brought to this practice and to ensure consumer protection in the switching process. As to the content of the confirmation letter, the OCA believes that the letter must contain all necessary information, but agrees that all presentation should be informative and neutral. The OCA has worked with several EDCs and EGSs over the years to arrive at language in the letters that achieves this result. For the most part, the confirmation letters are now well presented, informative, and serve the important purpose of mitigation of switches of suppliers without customer consent. Thank you.
Thank you. Now it's my pleasure to welcome to the panel Dick Webster, Director of Rates and Regulatory Affairs for PECO Energy. Welcome.
Chairman, Vice Chairman, Commissioners, Your Honor, thanks for having me here today. Let me start by saying that PECO is in support of exploring options to accelerate the supplier switching timeframe and is committed to working with the Commission and stakeholders to develop and implement changes where possible. Although PECO believes the confirmation letter and waiting period should not be eliminated, we do believe the period can be shortened. As with many of these topics, the changes appear simple but are in fact complex, and it's important to understand their operational and customer implications. As you've heard, the current switching process follows what is often referred to as the 16-day rule. This rule requires that customer enrollment be received through an EDI, electronic data exchange transaction, 16 days prior to the meter read date. The 16 days allows for sufficient time to comply with current PUC regulations, which require the EDC to send the customer a confirmation letter. The confirmation letter explains there is a 10-day waiting period during which the customer may cancel its selection, which is followed by an additional 6-day period during which the EDC will make operational changes needed to account for the switch in its systems. The 6-day period allows for system interfaces to take place, permits adherence to PJM rules for scheduling capacity, and also includes some time for a weekend. The 6-day process is where the locking in of the enrollment for the EGS occurs. PECO supports shortening the switching timeline from the current 16 days to 10 days. In this scenario, the customer enrollment would have to be received at least 10 days prior to the meter read date. The enrollment is processed on the evening of the day it's received, which triggers sending the confirmation letter that includes the waiting period. Sorry, lost my place. PECO believes that the current 10-day period could be shortened to 4 days. Since the confirmation letter is sent to the customer through the U.S. mail, the customer will receive the letter in 1 to 3 days and therefore will generally have 1 to 3 days to rescind the enrollment. So although changing the waiting period to 4 days does make the timing somewhat tight, we believe it can be done without compromising consumer protections. From an implementation standpoint, the change would require some system changes to reprogram the waiting period. We also expect that we would need to do some consumer education and some internal training to make folks aware of the new process. As I stated earlier, PICO does not support eliminating the confirmation letter or the waiting period, as we believe it provides for an important consumer protection and is an integral part of the choice process that should be maintained. In fact, PICO currently is seeing an average of 300 rescinds per week, or about 4% of the current at the current levels of switching. And interestingly, an average of about one-third of those rescinds actually relate to switches between EGSs. Accordingly, PICO believes that the elimination of the waiting period could lead to consumer complaints and billing issues, and that providing customer notification and adequate waiting period enables the customer to make an educated decision as to whether or not to stay with a selected EGS. In summary, PICO is in support of shortening the supplier switching time frame while maintaining current consumer protections, and looks forward to working with the Commission and stakeholders to enable that acceleration. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to recognize Commissioner Whitmer for purposes of questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, panelists. You know, you've all talked about being supportive of eliminating or shortening the 10-day time frame. I guess I would ask Ms. McCloskey and Mr. Webster, how frequently do you, from your experience, can you quantify the amount of slamming that has taken place so far?
I don't know that I'd call it slamming. As I said, we're seeing 300 customers per week change their selection, enroll with an EGS, either between EGSs or from default service, and then in turn deciding that they don't want to do that. You know, what the root cause of that is, I don't have data on. I know that when I switched from one EGS to another, the prior EGS does get notification of the drop, and I did get a nice phone call from them encouraging me to stay, which I did not. But so that may be driving some of the behavior, or it may be some folks, deciding to make an enrollment and then changing their mind shortly thereafter. We haven't seen evidence of slamming per se. We are tracking in our call centers where customers call us. I assume that BCS is also tracking those types of issues. Early on, we were seeing about 20 per month of customers that felt that they were not treated appropriately by an EGS. I think that's dropped off to an even smaller number. So I hope that answers your question.
I don't have much information to add to what Mr. Webster said, but in our office, again, we're not seeing a large volume of complaints regarding slamming. But again, we have the confirmation letter that's in place that is possibly addressing that before anything would reach that level of a complaint.
Well, I would maybe take a little bit of a different perspective, that if we're not hearing of problems, then, you know, there's not necessarily harm in shortening that or eliminating it.
I think from our perspective, it's the fact that it's not escalating to a complaint that our office would hear about is a little bit of a different set of information than what Mr. Webster has provided. He would get the more direct calls trying to cancel a switch. If the customer is satisfied that his company has taken the right action when they contact them, it doesn't escalate to our offices or even to the commission. But I do think that you could shorten that time period. The 10 days does provide a fairly long period of time for the customer, and it would probably be useful to go ahead and try and work to shorten that time frame.
Okay. Just one other question, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Absolutely.
Mr. Hudson, could you explain to me a little bit the expedited dispute resolution process that you noted might be helpful?
Yes, as I mentioned, we recognize the critical importance of ensuring that unauthorized switching doesn't take place, and I think it's important to break instances of inadvertent switches into two categories. You've got simple mistakes. For example, a digit gets transposed and you accidentally enroll the wrong account because a 9 got turned into an 8 or something like that. And then you have actual instances of slamming. In either instance, we think that concomitant with elimination of this waiting period, there should be added customer protection, such as an accelerated
complaint resolution process, and we actually describe this in our comments to the retail markets investigation.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. The tape stopped, so.
Sure.
1 second.
You described it in your comments to the investigation.
Yes. So what we've recommended is that the Bureau of Consumer Services would develop a process to address inadvertent enrollment. So a customer could submit a complaint to BCS. There would be a shortened time frame of 10 business days where the EGS would be allowed to supply documentation to verify that the switch was indeed authorized. If that resolved it, then the issue would be closed. If not, then it could be escalated into a more formal type of complaint resolution process following the Commission's existing regulatory procedures. But it's our expectation that the vast majority of situations would actually get resolved even before it becomes before the Bureau of Consumer Services. It would get resolved between the customer and the EGS, for example. I would note if a customer is switched, we're talking about a residential customer, and the economic harm at stake for 1 or 2 months of service is not a great deal of money, and I would expect that most suppliers would be willing to, in order to maintain good standing with the Commission, would be willing to issue a rebate to a customer to cover that shortened period of time where there's lost savings. They feel like they should have had a rate of 7 cents with the supplier that they did select, but they were accidentally enrolled with the other supplier and were billed 8 cents. That's a difference of 1 penny per kilowatt hour, which is about $10 for a month of service. So we think this type of expedited complaint resolution process could adequately address the consumer protection concerns.
Thank you.
Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'd also like to acknowledge the panel and thank you all for participating. I have a comment more so than a question, and my comment is that most of the consumer protections that we find in place today are the direct result of some type of gross inappropriate behavior on the part of suppliers and vendors. And so when you're asking for relaxation of these consumer protections, kind of rubs me the wrong way. I am supportive of shortening the waiting period, but not would have a hard time being convinced to eliminate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chairman Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also echo the sentiments of my colleagues. Thank you to the panel for excellent presentations. And I will yield my time for question to Commissioner Whitmer.
You meant Cawley, right? Commissioner Cawley.
I think we should all be clear what we're talking about here. This is a letter that goes from the utility to someone who's chosen an alternative supplier. And the letter says, the utility says, we have received notice that you've switched for your electricity to such and so supplier. And you don't have to do anything. And after 10 days, we'll make the switch. It's just to make sure that so-called slamming doesn't occur. And the problem is this adds to the time when someone gets the benefit of the bargain that they've contracted for. And we've discovered that it's a great frustration to customers to learn that it all revolves around their utility distribution company billing cycle, their meter reading date. They said, why can't we get this sooner? So that's what we're talking about. To my knowledge, is suggesting that we eliminate this letter. The only issue is, can we get the service switched before the letter arrives, or can we somehow unwind the transaction if that's necessary? The consumer protection has to stay in place. So we are looking for ways to end the delay. Smart meters, of course, someday will eliminate this problem. If we can shorten the time with somehow electronic notification, that would be a lot better. But in my discussions with our consumer service representatives, I've learned that the problem really of so-called slamming is minimal to none. And I think that's the reason for that is the suppliers know that they will be severely punished if they're ever discovered slamming customers. We will not hesitate to yank their license to do business in Pennsylvania. So all the money that they have spent establishing a business in Pennsylvania will be lost. And of course, they don't want to take that risk, so they do their very best not to do anything that harms customers. So I think the risk of customers not receiving that protection is minimal. I mean, it's just minimal. The problem, I agree with you, Mr. Hudson, the problem is not so great that we should penalize everybody with a delay just because there occasionally is a mistake made, or there is an inadvertent switch. But we've also discovered that many of the suppliers are using third-party verification, meaning the supplier makes the sale, but then an independent party calls next, or they're switched to a third-party verification to verify that the customer has actually chosen a supplier. So when a complaint comes in, our consumer representatives immediately ask, do you have a third-party verification tape? And often they do, and when the customer hears the tape played back to them, they say, oh yes, I remember now, I did make that switch. So the combination of things here, I think, add up to the fact that at a minimum we shorten the period of time that the letter is sent or arrives, and we should be able to get service switched faster without waiting for the U.S. mail to deliver a letter. And thereby we'll end up satisfying customers a lot more and eliminating this barrier that people perceive to getting the benefit of their bargain.
Thank you, Commissioner Cawley. And I just have one question. I guess it's the $64,000 question. Mr. Webster, you said in your testimony 4 days?
The waiting period would be 4 days. Total period would be 10 days.
10 days, okay.
Yeah, 4 days for the waiting period.
Tanya, what would the OCA advocate? We're talking, again, the 16-day rule. We know it's antiquated. We know it's a detriment to shopping, confusing the customers. So what's the OCA position?
We've supported a 5-day period for the waiting period within the confirmation letter, again, because of some of the uncertainties with the mailing process, but we think 5 days would probably capture that. The other suggestion that we had is that there be a date certain within the letter that might be able to trigger to the customer, today's the day I must act.
Okay. Andrea, and I know you do some work in the Lone Star State. Why don't you tell us how quickly it's done in the Lone Star State?
I was, in fact, coached this morning to be careful with my y'alls, so I worked very carefully at that. On average, in Texas, you can switch within approximately a week, and, in fact, they are evaluating opportunities for same-day switches. So I think that I agree that you have to be confident in your affirmative consent, but that the benefits to the customers must be realized. And I would offer that while the utility may have a number of complaints or the 300-4%, I'm not clear on which, we should also, to have a full picture of that, consider the suppliers and the feedback that they're getting from the customers that have tried to switch and haven't been successful and are wondering where their benefits are. I think that's an imperative piece of the puzzle. To answer your question, 5 days or less.
5 days or less. Okay, Richie?
Yeah, there's a couple of points I wanted to make before I get to your actual question. First, you know, regarding the number of rescinds, 300 or approximately 4%, I think that's being driven, and I will admit this is some degree of speculation on my part, but I think suppliers have built business models that actually take advantage of this waiting period. As Mr. Webster mentioned, if you get that notice to drop, that is information that when EGS gets, they can then initiate a reach out to the customer to convince them to then go back and rescind their pending enrollment. So I would just caution not to read too much into those numbers, because I think it's driven by many other things other than inadvertent enrollments on the part of a supplier. To the question of timing for the notice period, while I appreciate the sentiment of shortening that notice period, in my view, it's a very dangerous form of incrementalism. Switching the 10-day waiting period from 10 days to 5 or 4 is not going to dramatically affect this process from a customer's perspective. The current waiting period is 16 to 45 days, and that's driven by a 10-day notice period. If you dial that back to 5 days, you're looking at 10 to 40 days. I still think customers are going to be very upset when they can't establish service with their EGS for 40 days. That's just unacceptable. And the final point that I wanted to make, and we haven't discussed this much today, but I think it's an important issue, and it's a longer-term issue, is that in order to drive towards the end state, we should be looking at allowing customers to switch on a day other than their scheduled meter read date. I fully recognize that this will require additional billing and metering and data management infrastructure changes than simply changing or eliminating the 10-day notice period. But this is a policy driver that we should be looking at for the medium term, because ultimately that's how you get to the kind of numbers that you're seeing in Texas. Even fully eliminating the 10-day notice period still means that in some instances it can take up to a full billing cycle for a customer switch to be made effective. Once we have smart meters in place, we can and should implement changes to make that much, much more quicker.
So are you telling me those gold-plated customer information systems are antiquated?
Yes.
Okay. Dick, I'm sorry. I didn't want to go there. But I want to thank the panel for an excellent presentation. I'd call now on, I know Andrea and Richie are going to stay on the next panel entitled Customer Referrals, but I'd call on Tony Banks, Vice President of Competitive Market Policy for First Energy Solutions, and call back to the panel Chris Kelleher, Senior Director of Government and Regulatory Affairs for Direct Energy. And why don't we get started with the first presentation from Richard Hudson, again, State Chairman of the Retail Energy Supply Association here in Pennsylvania.
Mr. Chairman, before they begin, I need to know what the time limits they have split amongst themselves.
This panel, as outlined on the agenda, is we have allotted 15 minutes. Total.
All right.
Commissioner Gardner's reminding me.
I'll just set the timer for 15 minutes.
3 minutes each.
Or 3 minutes each.
Okay.
There's four. That's right. That's 12. So
that's fine. Thank you.
So thank you again, Mr. Chairman. This next subject that we're going to talk about is the issue of a customer referral program. There was a lot of excellent testimony at the last en banc hearing and earlier today that discussed some of the perceived and, in my opinion, actual structural barriers that are impeding the full development of retail competition here in Pennsylvania. One of those is the fact, as Mr. Madonna mentioned, that despite 88% of customers being aware that they can shop, only 44% have actually taken some action to look into selecting an EGS. This is, as has been mentioned, a perfect example of the current status quo bias that exists in favor of utility-provided generation service as the default service option. And this issue, customer implementation of a customer referral program, is, in my opinion, one of the key short-term measures that can be adopted to go right at the heart of this status quo bias. Currently, as the Commission is aware, all customers are automatically assigned to default service if they move into a service territory or if they change locations from one location to another. A properly structured customer referral program can address this status quo bias by introducing at the service initiation process and at other customer contact points an actual tangible supply selection decision to the customer. The retail markets investigation, there's been a subgroup. Participants have included retail suppliers. RISA has led the subgroup. The Office of Consumer Advocate, several of the electric distribution companies have participated in the subgroup, and I'd like to thank all of those participants for their work in this on this issue. While the subgroup hasn't arrived at a fully unanimous consensus on all of the implementation details surrounding a customer referral program, I do believe a lot of progress has been made. There's general consensus among the subgroup participants that this is a good idea that should be explored and implemented. And for the remainder of my time, I'll quickly walk through some of RISA's individual recommendations regarding a customer referral program. We have recommended to the retail markets investigation adopting a customer referral program similar to the New York model, which has been a very successful program for introducing the concept of competition to customers. Under the recommendation for Pennsylvania, we would make a couple of modifications to the New York model. First of all, as the Commission is aware, the New York model envisions a two-month introductory discount of 7%. We think that introductory discount rate approach is the approach that should be adopted for Pennsylvania, but we would recommend a three-month a period for that introductory discount rate to accommodate the mandatory two notices that are required by Pennsylvania regulations. Eligibility would be made available to residential and small business customers. Customers could select a supplier by name or could be randomly referred to a supplier. And participation in the program would be optional to competitive suppliers. At the end of the three-month introductory period, the supplier would have to send the customer the mandatory notices that I mentioned, and the customer would revert to a month-to-month product with that particular supplier. Service, as I mentioned, would be continued on a month-to-month basis. But an important customer protection that we're recommending is that this product would, as a condition of participating in this program, EGSs would agree not to impose early termination or cancellation fees. So that's the recommendation for a customer referral program in a nutshell, and I see that I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you. Recognize Ms. Andrea Williams again, Senior Director of Regulatory and Strategy and Policy for NRG Energy.
Thank you again for the opportunity to be here. Leveraging on what Richie explained, NRG believes that customer referral programs are one mechanism that can help continue to have this competitive market flourish in Pennsylvania and perhaps acclimate customers with the experience of shopping and choosing a supplier. But it's imperative that we remain mindful that this, as currently designed, as you heard Richie mention, is a price-based offering, and there are other value propositions that are equally important to customers. We've heard a lot about price, and it's important, and I'm not going to take away from that, but there are a number of retailers, whether they offer affinity programs or renewable programs, that are having some success here, and we should maintain that. That goes to the point that the participation in this referral program should be optional. NRG looks forward to the opportunity where there are further modifications, perhaps later, to the referral program that will enable other products that are non-price-based products to be something that are offered to customers, or other market design things to help continue to move the pendulum away from the presumption that a one-size-fits-all, albeit perhaps a price game, is what is best suited for all consumers. We want to continue to educate them that each individual need has an opportunity here in the market to be served by any number of competitors, and it's not just about dollars and cents on the bill. The savings could be in terms of miles and other things. So price is important, but it cannot continue to be the sole focus to ensure that we have a flourishing market here where every individual customer need is met. So The other thing that I wanted to mention is, with respect to the introductory period, one thing that's imperative for folks to remember is that at the end of that period, that doesn't inherently mean that the savings, to the extent that that's what's important, will necessarily go away. Richie talked about 7% or for 3 months, and then going month to month. there's as much probability at the end of that, those 3 months that prices will be lower, because none of us clearly can control what happens in the wholesale market, as they are that they would be higher. So the arguments are inherent opposition to this program under the presumption that at the end of it, the EGS will just simply raise prices is flawed, and we should be mindful that for a variety of reasons, not just the underlying wholesale market, but our inherent desire to serve customers will be cemented. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I'd like to recognize Chris Kelleher, Senior Director of Government and Regulatory Affairs for Direct Energy. Chris.
Thank you again for the opportunity to address the Commission. I want to focus in on just the service initiation aspect of the referral program and to make a couple of points. Number one, the New York-style referral program is absolutely the way to go as the near-term solution for offering customers who are moving or starting a new business or otherwise initiating service. And my colleague and friend Ron Cernigli, who is with Direct, pretty much invented this program when he was at the Commission, and it's almost beautiful in its simplicity and elegance. And it is the perfect thing to do in the near term. And in fact, Con Ed has implemented in New York such a program at service initiation. It's been in effect for about 4 months, and we believe it has proven out the hypothesis that customers are sort of uniquely susceptible to choosing among things like electric suppliers or telephone suppliers or cable or television suppliers when they move. In the 4 months since this program has been in effect in Con Ed, we only have visibility into the enrollments that we get through Direct Energy and our Gateway subsidiary, but we have seen, in the case of Gateway, a five-fold increase in the number of customers that we've gotten through this channel since that change has been made. And if you gross that up across the 31 suppliers who are enrolled in that program, we think it shows that there's substantial interest in switching at the point of service initiation. And there will be a full report on that program coming out on November 23rd, and we'll make sure that you get a copy of it. In the long term, though, it's not enough just to give people the option of shopping at service initiation. When you move into your house, you can practically stand on the porch and get offers from all sorts of different types of providers. And if you want to, for example, start your fuel oil supplier, you have to call somebody, and that's the way it works in Texas. You have to call an electric supplier to get them to enroll you for distribution as well as commodity service. And so we think in the long run, there will be two essential features that need to be built into the system in such a way that we would encourage you to direct the utilities to file these as part of their next plan. One feature would be customers need to be able to enroll directly with an EGS for distribution service as well as for commodity service. And second, for those customers who continue to enroll through the utility, they need to be able to see a robust range of options, not just the commodity options that, as Andrea identified, they need to be able to choose among a wide variety of things, not just the standardized product. And so that's the longer-term vision to go with the near-term solution. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to remind you about the prohibition on shameless self-promotion of Ron Cerniglia. I see Ron out there smiling, but way to go. Now it's a pleasure to introduce Tony Banks, Vice President of Competitive Market Policies for First Energy Solutions. Tony, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to try to differentiate, I guess, our position on some of these things a little bit. While we agree that a customer referral program is a very good idea, we do differ a little bit in the structure that we think that referral program should take. And before we get into the structure, I want to give some insight as to why we take some of the positions we do. We are in the marketplace every day. We do focus groups, we do surveys, we test market products. And one of our fundamental beliefs is that we should give the customer what they want. And overwhelmingly, based on some of the survey results you saw earlier, customers want the best price today. That's not to suggest that as the market continues to develop, they'll be motivated more by other products and services, but our research and our actual experience in the marketplace indicates customers want fixed price, lowest price, and for some period of time, a term that will give them some stability and comfort. And they want it to be simple. So when we think about the marketplace, everything that we do or our opinions are based on that fundamental belief. Secondly, we think that the market really needs to open up the opportunities for all suppliers. So we think that as suppliers want to participate in the Pennsylvania markets, they need to position themselves to earn the customer and not necessarily be given customers. So again, even though we think we should eliminate all the barriers to suppliers entering the market, we do believe that to some degree, suppliers need to earn the opportunity to serve customers. So as it relates specifically to referral programs, we agree with most of the participants that new customers to a utility and moving customers should not have to go to default service before they would be able to shop with a supplier. We fully support that notion. But as it relates to introductory prices, we understand the New York model, and a lot of folks think that's very good. But again, we do a lot of customer focus groups and surveys, and when we heard other surveyors talk about 40 plus percent of customers don't do anything, well, we kind of came up with those same numbers, but the number one reason that they didn't do anything was because they weren't convinced that they were going to save money, which was a point that was agreed upon by most surveyors. But second in our survey was that they were concerned about introductory prices that later increase. And so a lot of folks shy away from those introductory prices. So we're not sure that it's worth the risk of an introductory offering that customers might look at later and determine that they aren't satisfied with the service. As it relates to referrals by the EDC, we believe that the EDC should refer existing customers who move to their existing EGS. We don't think that an EGS should lose a customer just because someone happened to move, unless, again, the customer makes an affirmative decision to switch EGSs. And then finally, we think that the EGS should be responsible for the enrollments. They do that today, and to the extent we want to add that burden to the utility, we can expect that they're going to want some kind of cost recovery, so why create something that's not needed? So that summarizes my comments. Be happy to entertain any questions.
Great. Now I'd like to transfer over to our consumer panel. What we're going to do here is we're going to go through our consumer panel and then the EDC perspective, and then we'll come back for our Q&A. So Tanya, I'll start with you.
Thank you, Chairman. And each of our panelists is going to take 5 minutes, Judge Barnes. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak today about the potential for an introduction of a customer referral program in Pennsylvania. As the Commission set forth in its tentative order, this topic includes a number of potential programs ranging from changes to call center scripts and welcome kits to programs that refer or enroll a customer in a standard product offered by the electric generation suppliers participating in a program. I'd like to start with the call center scripts, and particularly for calls to initiate service and for calls from customers who are moving within the service territory. In the OCA's view, these two types of customer contacts provide an opportunity to inform and educate customers about retail choice in Pennsylvania. In establishing service in either situation, the call center representative could break the service initiation process into two parts. The first part being the establishment of the distribution service, and the second part being the establishment of the generation service. This two-step process allows the customer to understand that a separate choice of generation supplier can be made in Pennsylvania. In the subgroup that has worked on this issue, the OCA provided a sample call center script as to how this conversation could occur. Critical to this endeavor, though, is that the call center representative and the information provided should be informative, brief, and neutral. The customer should be provided with all information about choice, including information on default service if they do not wish to choose an alternative supplier at that time. The goal should not be to force the customer into a choice, but to make sure the customer is informed of this option and to facilitate any choice that the customer may decide to make on the call. As part of this initiative, the OCA also supports modifications to the welcome kits that are sent to new customers. While introducing choice in the service initiation process is an important step, many customers may wish to take some additional time and receive additional information. The welcome kits provide the opportunity to get more information into the customer's hands while they are still thinking about their new electric service. That information could range from general information sheets to lists of suppliers with contact information to actual supplier offers. The OCA recommends that the stakeholders continue to work on the modifications to the welcome kit. Building on the call center script modifications and the welcome kits, the OCA is of the view that work should continue on the implementation of a standard product referral program. Under this type of program, in addition to providing the information about retail choice, the call center representative would also have a standard EGS product that the customer could select. Much work remains to be done on the details of such a program, and you've heard a lot of different perspectives on that already today. But in its comments, the OCA detailed some key elements for a standard product referral program. In the interest of time, I will not repeat those and much of that discussion, but I wanted to highlight a few key points. In our view, the program should be simple to understand and administer so that the contact with the customer is not overwhelming for either the customer or the call center representative. Customers should not be required to enroll in the program during the initial contact if they do not feel ready to make the choice, but they should be allowed to enroll within a specified time period after having the opportunity to review material on the program. Any introductory offer should guarantee savings for at least a four-month period, but should not be unrealistic or appear to be a gimmick. The participating EGS should be required to offer customers a fixed-rate product at the end of the introductory period, and the customer should affirmatively sign up to stay with the EGS at the end of that introductory period. A well-designed program could potentially bring benefits to customers, allow customers to experience the retail markets, and ensure that no harm comes to the customer through a commission-sponsored program. Just a final note about cost and timing. Changes to the existing systems to accommodate these programs will have cost consequences for EDCs and their ratepayers. Programs should be carefully considered before implementation to ensure that the costs are commensurate with the benefits expected, and ratepayers alone should not bear the costs of the programs when they also provide benefits to participating state suppliers. And a point on timing, consideration should be given to when and how these initiatives are rolled out. Trying to implement overlapping programs, which may be competing for advertising time and customer attention, may not result in the success of any of the programs. The OCA looks forward to continuing to work with the Commission and the subgroup and other stakeholders to determine the most effective referral programs to educate customers and facilitate customer choice. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I'd like to recognize Mr. Harry Geller, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Utility Law Project.
Thank you, Chairman. Good afternoon. Thank you, Commissioners, for allowing me this opportunity to comment. As you know, Pope represents low-income consumers, and my comments today will be directed to the effect of referrals on low-income consumers, particularly the CAP programs. The Electric Choice Act, while enabling the development of competition in Pennsylvania, specifically addressed concerns regarding low-income consumers in a competitive environment. Through statutory direction and guidance regarding the development and administration of low-income universal service programs, such as CAPs, the Act provided an intended haven to assist these customers maintain electric service at affordable terms. It's therefore crucial that any potential process or structure of referring low-income customers, particularly CAP customers, to a competitive generation supplier be implemented only after rules and procedures are in place to ensure that the benefits of universal service are retained. In whatever referral process is ultimately developed, care must be taken in referring CAP customers who, by virtue of their participation in CAP, have demonstrated that they are not only low income, but they are payment troubled. And to put this into further context, the Commission's recent 2010 Universal Service Report indicates that the average household income of an electric CAP customer falls between $13,000 to $14,000. That's the household income. These folks are vulnerable. Thus, the Commission must be vigilant to develop a referral process which at every stage, not just in the introductory stages, cap customers will be referred to products with prices that are no greater than the price to compare, which are not subject to cancellation fees or penalties. Furthermore, cap customers must not be precluded from returning to the EDC as a cap customer, if necessary, with the same rights and benefits which were available prior to shopping. To do otherwise would place an undue economic burden on the shoulders of these most vulnerable households and potentially place costs on other ratepayers to subsidize any costs which may occur as a result of choices in shopping that raise their rates. There are also many unanswered questions about the ability of low-income customers enrolled in a number of the EDC customer assistance plans to choose an alternative supplier. The ability to shop and the economic effects of doing so by a cap customer are significantly diverse among the EDCs. They range from a blanket inability shop to removal from cap if the customer chooses to shop, to varying and complex methods of allocating potential financial benefits and losses as a result of shopping. These threshold questions need to be resolved in a comprehensive, clear, and uniform manner prior to any referral program for cap customers to be able to be implemented. While a subgroup is targeted to be formed that's intended to address universal service and cap issues, there have as yet been no meetings nor any timetable set for that to happen. It would be placing the cart before the horse to develop or sanction any particular referral process for cap customers without first knowing who can participate and on what terms. Furthermore, assuming the ability to resolve these threshold issues in a timely manner, the issue of the actual referral process for cap customers would require detailed planning and development. This has not yet been begun. Cap program issues are complex and, similar to the ability to shop, vary among the EDCs. In order to provide a cap participant with a true and complete insight into the effects of shopping, and for that customer to provide knowledgeable and informed consent, scripts would need to be tailored to each EDC to reflect the differences regarding the effects on the customer's payment and cap status as a result of, for example, the application of LIHEAP grants, the implementation of maximum cap credits, and referrals to energy efficiency programs. Coordination of the EDC call center referral process would also need to be addressed. Many EDCs maintain separate call centers for cap customers to enroll them, to recertify them, to address cap-specific issues, and to discuss billing inquiries in cap customers. Some of these call centers are administered by the company, some are privately contracted out, and some are done with community-based organizations. A protocol will need to be developed to coordinate these different centers in order to ensure that accurate, comprehensive, and clear information about shopping is provided to each cap or potential cap customer. I thank you.
Thank you. Now it's my pleasure to welcome Jane Breesmeister, Senior Legislative Representative for the AARP State Advocacy and Strategy for the AARP. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. AARP appreciates the opportunity to participate on these panels today. With regard to a referral program, we believe that a referral program could be helpful to consumers who want to consider choosing different service, but the details are very important. Consumer protections and disclosures are essential, as outlined by OCA and by AARP and PULP in our joint comments. And in fact, I think they relate directly to some of the findings of the surveys that we heard earlier, that clear disclosures and good consumer protections can reduce perceptions of hassle and risk and lack of trust that consumers are indicating that they feel in this market. One issue which AARP would like to especially highlight is that of the use of teaser or introductory rates. And by that I mean the type of low rates that might be in effect for a few months and then go away. The suggestion, for example, in the referral program of a 7% rate reduction for 3 months. What happens then? Consumers need to know before they agree to go into the referral program what happens after the introductory period. What does month-to-month mean? Is it a variable rate? Is it some type of fixed rate that the consumer can get out of? On a month-to-month often means that there's no contract term, so the consumer wouldn't have a penalty to leave. Clear disclosure of that is very, very essential in this market. In fact, we hear from our members in other states that have restructured markets about this problem of introductory or teaser rates, where they're not fully informed of the what they've signed up for after the introductory period. And in fact, just last month in a town hall here in Pennsylvania, we had members who talked about their experience with their bills suddenly going up very significantly after only a few months. And maybe they were uninformed or simply unaware that they had agreed to introductory rates or maybe some type of a variable plan. The issue of word of mouth was mentioned earlier, and you know, word of mouth does go both ways. So we think it's really important that consumers who participate in the referral program have a positive experience, and we urge the Commission to do whatever you can to ensure that that will happen for customers. Secondly, I'd like to just add that a referral program does primarily benefit the EGSs and that they should bear the cost of the program, not the customers of the EDC. And this is what New York currently does require for their referral program. And remember, a referral program does some of the work that an EGS would otherwise have to do in the market. An EGS otherwise would win customers through advertising, through direct mail, through other types of contacts. A referral program does give them a leg up, and to that extent, it's a benefit to them, which we believe that they should cover the cost for it. Thank you.
Thank you. It's now my pleasure to welcome back Dick Webster, Director of Rates and Regulatory Affairs for PECO Energy.
Chairman, thank you again. PECO has been actively working with the Customer Referral Working Group since last summer to better understand various approaches to customer referral programs and how they might be implemented. This working group includes retail suppliers, consumer advocates, and EDCs who would have a large part in implementing the programs. Today, we've heard at a high level how some of these programs could work. We've also heard of some of the considerations that are important to consumer advocates. As the Commission has recognized, referral programs can be designed along a continuum with options ranging from simply providing information to customers about shopping to more comprehensive programs like those that were implemented in New York. In PECO's view, the attributes of a well-designed customer referral program include one that educates customers about retail choice, provides customers with a clear opportunity for savings, and creates a positive shopping experience for them. PECO supports the inclusion of customer referral programs in the upcoming default service filings and will continue to work through the various program options through the stakeholder working group process. At the same time, the task of implementing referral programs can be quite significant, so we emphasize it's critically important to allow sufficient time after program approval for proper and effective implementation. In general, we believe there are five basic areas that must be further developed. One, how the standard offer by participating EGSs should be designed. Two, how customer communications should be handled. Three, how the enrollment process will be implemented. Four, how to operationalize the program from a call center standpoint. And five, how and from whom program costs should be recovered. In terms of the standard offer, the latest working group discussions have focused on options including a 7% discount from an EDC's default service rate for a three-month period. We agree that the three-month offer represents an improvement over the two-month introductory offers previously discussed. Also, current discussions suggest that the discount would be coordinated with the EDC's default service rates, which change quarterly. As we've heard, an important consideration is what happens at the end of the introductory period, both in terms of the price customers will pay, as well as what happens if the customer doesn't make an affirmative choice to remain with the EGS. PECO favors an approach in which the customer receives a clearly communicated fixed rate offering following the introductory period, which would cover months 4 through 12. We believe this approach will best enable the customer to make an educated decision as to whether they stay with the EGS, choose a different EGS, or return to default service. We prefer this approach to the variable market-based rate used in New York because of the uncertainty associated with the variable rate. In terms of customer communications, Under the framework being proposed, a customer participating in a referral program will receive four communications from the time of enrollment through the end of the introductory period. The customer will initially be notified through an EDC confirmation letter. This will be followed by the EGS's terms and conditions, which will not only define the introductory period, but also provide an explanation of the post-introductory period. Also, consistent with PUC rules, approximately 60 days prior to the end of the introductory period, the commission will receive, the customer will receive a notice alerting it to the end of the introductory period, and no more than 45 days prior to the end of the introductory period, the customer will be notified of the fixed price offer that will apply in months 4 through 12. This approach gives us comfort that customers will be well educated regarding their options. Also, the fact that a customer is free to switch at any time with no penalty provides a well-balanced framework of consumer protections. With this basic framework in mind, some important implementation issues remain. The first issue relates to the enrollment process itself. PICO supports the approach currently being discussed that provides that the EDC will transmit the relevant customer enrollment data to the selected EGS each day, enabling the EGS to enroll the customer through the normal EDI enrollment process. While this is a simplified approach, some complex system functionality would have to be developed to record the EGS selection in our systems, transmit the data, ensure the availability of the default service customers only, and allow random selection if desired. Furthermore, we envision making enrollment in the referral program available online through PICO's website and potentially through our interactive voice response systems, which is another system function that would have to be designed and implemented. The next question is, what is the optimal approach to implementing these programs from a call center standpoint? We feel strongly that we'd be most effective to implement the programs through a separate, contracted, or outsourced call center similar to those used by PICO successfully as part of our Act 129 programs. This would enable a dedicated training effort and execution to maintain a specific focus on the program. As the working group has discussed, the potential downside to this approach is that it involves a handoff or a transfer of a call, and some percentage of customers may lose interest or not stay with the call. However, I believe that the upside of segmenting the program from the current day-to-day general customer service workload and engaging the customer with a dedicated, specialized team will outweigh the risk of the lost call. Another possibility, which PICO considers attractive, would be to implement the referral program on a statewide basis and establish a statewide call center to handle the customer enrollment.
I'm sorry, we're out of tape. One second, please.
PICO looks forward to working with the commission and stakeholders to implement these programs.
I want to thank you.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get to the end of what I said, Mr. Chairman. I apologize.
Sorry. Do I have a timer? Did you change the tape?
Mr. Chairman, may I take this time?
Let's go with you at the end.
That's fine. But after the questions are...
We're going to take a one-minute stretch break.
Thank you. Okay.
All right.
Where am I? Am I done?
Please pick up.
Okay. Sorry. I was almost finished. So just let me briefly come back to my point that referral programs could be implemented in different forms or on a more limited basis if desired. For example, a referral program could be entirely enabled through the website or through the IVR system. As others have mentioned, we could embellish our welcome kit and provide additional information in our welcome kits, for example, supplier offers, or perhaps an easy return enrollment postcard that we would process at PICO. And also, potentially, a referral program could be implemented for a more limited segment of customer contacts. So with that, we look forward to working with the commission and stakeholders to properly design and implement a program.
Thank you. If we could just take a one-minute break, and then we're going to jump right into the Q&A with this panel. Ask everybody to take their seats here. Technically, we have full bench strength here with three of us. The other two will be arriving shortly. But we're going to open up the Q&A, and I'll first start with Commissioner Whitmer.
Thank you. And I promise to be brief, Mr. Chairman.
No?
It would be nice. All right.
Sorry. We will take a moment for the stenographer to get queued up. I would be glad to do that. Okay, and you are ready? Great. It's my pleasure to recognize Commissioner Whitmer for purposes of her questions. Commissioner Whitmer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Kelleher, you talk about the program, the referral program in New York that we know is outstanding because you guys developed it.
Prohibition, all right?
A question for you. Have you realized customer stickiness at the end of the referral program?
Well, that's an interesting question. I would distinguish between the original referral program that was not at the point of service initiation and then the expansion of it. To service initiation, we only have 4 months with the service initiation piece. So, but we have almost 5 years of the other referral program, and what we found is that there is a certain element of stickiness, but it's not as though people just stay on that service and never leave. What we did find is that there was a material amount of migration away from the supplier that you were switched to in the referral program, but it tended to be a much higher percentage of switching to another supplier rather than returning to default service. And there's certainly a report that we can get that will lay this all out. But we thought that was a very interesting result because it tended to support the hypothesis that if you get people used to the idea of shopping, then you know they're just used to the idea of shopping and they'll start looking around for alternatives out there and it becomes somewhat of a virtuous shopping circle.
Good. Thank you. And I would like to see that report. Thank you. Just one other question, and I would ask to direct this to the AARP representative. I'm sorry, Jane. You had suggested, well, I guess it's actually it's a comment on something that you had mentioned, and I would ask the others to respond. You had mentioned in your testimony that you think the referral program, the cost of which should be borne by the EGSs, because from your perspective, they're the primary beneficiaries. I'm wondering if the others agree with that supposition.
No. Yeah. I would pose this question. One of the nice things about having been doing this for a while is that you can look back at the way you thought things were going to go literally at the beginning. And you can ask the question, if you had it to do all over again at the very beginning, would you build this functionality into the system? Is it fundamental to the system? In other words, giving customers the ability to choose and really choose meaningfully, including at service initiation, is it a fundamental part of the market structure? And if it is, then customers are benefiting from it, and the cost should be borne by all customers. And we believe pretty strongly, at least at Direct, that this kind of functionality, especially at service initiation, is absolutely fundamental to the market structure. And viewed from that perspective, because we believe it brings benefits to everyone, including the utilities, to the extent it gets them less encumbered by a service the best they can do is get all their money back on. So we think it should be borne by all customers.
We believe that the cost should be borne in part by participating EGSs, since you typically have a subset of EGSs who participate in the program. I think those participating EGSs would be willing to put some skin in the game, if you will, and that's similar to the discussions around opt-in auctions that we've been having. So that's what we would propose.
And if I may, just as I think my comments demonstrated, many low-income customers are in this land of in-between where they don't know if they can shop or can shop. They are still with the electric distribution company, and they still pay rates in many regards, even if they're discounted. What we don't want is to have these low-income individuals bear the cost of this competition and referral program.
Well, as you can see,
I'm sorry. What was the end of what you said, Mr. Geller? I missed it. You don't want low income to bear the cost.
Is to have these low income individuals bear the cost of the referral program to GSS.
Yeah, and I would just add that I think the answer is it really depends on the cost. I certainly understand the perspective that EGSs who are likely to benefit from this program should share in the costs, and I would not disagree with that proposition. But we're talking about simultaneously implementing things like the creation of a customer referral program and more fundamental infrastructure changes to EDC platforms and systems. And I don't believe it's appropriate for EGSs to bear the full cost of necessary infrastructure that should be in place to support a competitive market. So I think ultimately it depends, and there should be a very close look at what the costs are. Are they truly incremental, and how do you split, split and allocate those costs?
And I would agree with Richie. We need to look at what's incremental, and to the extent they're incremental to the EGS process, and it's probably appropriate for the EGS to pay. But that's part of the reason why I think we should push as much of the responsibility to the EGS. So in other words, the EDC gets them referred out and they're done. Then the EGS takes over from there, because their infrastructures are already designed to handle customer enrollments and the like. So I would agree.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Whitmer. Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to, again, thank the panelists for all of the useful information that they're bringing to bear. And with that, I'll yield my time to Commissioner Cawley.
I'd like to recognize the Vice Chairman for his questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to our panelists again. I wanted to stay on the topic of the cost recovery, and my question is along the lines of a cost benefit. Has there been any quantifiable number as to what this means to the ultimate consumer to create these programs?
Well, you know my position. Again, we think that the consumer is best served by having the lowest possible price, and to the extent there's a referral program, in some way it needs to guarantee that the consumer will benefit. And so from the perspective of the introductory price, if we're going to have one like PICO's represented, we think that the introductory price should be coupled with the fixed price. The only difference that I would have with the way they designed it is we think that the fixed price should be defined at the time that the consumer is referred to the supplier, because again, they're going into an unknown, and if at the end of the 3-month period they don't know what they're going to get, there's a good chance that there will be some criticism levied on someone because that price wasn't what they expected.
Vice Chairman, yes, I think cost has been an issue that we've tried to keep foremost in our mind in the subgroup process, but until we have an actual design of a program where we know exactly which systems are going to be implemented, it's been a little bit difficult to get our hands around the actual cost. But we agree we need to evaluate both the costs and the benefits of the different designs of the programs that we're contemplating, and then determine the most appropriate means of recovering those costs. As we said in our comments, they shouldn't be borne solely by the ratepayers.
If I may add, as we pointed out in our comments, the New York program has been around for many years, but their switching rate is 21%, which is actually lower than the statewide switching rate that I just saw on PAPowerSwitch.org.
One thing I would just add to that is I think that the lowest price may be the best solution for some customers, but not for all customers. And to your point, Chairman Paulson, in fact, if you were to go to Texas, you would certainly not be surprised to find that the people with the lowest prices out there certainly don't have the most customers. So we should be very mindful as we move forward and any presumptions that price is the sole determining factor. We've seen indications that it is for some, but I think part of that is also coupled with the fact that that's the primary message that they've been educated around, and the onus is on us, and especially the suppliers that have different value propositions, to move away from a price-only game.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I'd like to recognize Commissioner Cawley.
I thank the panel also. I think customer referral programs are long overdue in Pennsylvania. They'll work if they've worked in New York. I think with the kinds of insights we received today and the comments we've received, we'll get it right. We'll even do it better. So I yield the rest of my time and all of the time that Commissioner Gardner gave me to you, Chairman.
Well, I'm not going to use all of it, but I just really one question is, you know, we're talking about this notion of referral programs. Any thoughts from our retail energy suppliers about bringing this into or allowing it into commercial industrial customers as well?
Absolutely, and I think that is one of the things that perhaps would allow Pennsylvania to differentiate itself from New York, and we believe that that especially for small business customers, there should be an option for suppliers who perhaps only serve that sector to be able to participate in the program, so that group can make use of these of the program as well.
Okay. Yeah, and I would add in Reese's detailed recommendation to the retail markets investigation, we've recommended eligibility for the residential class as well as the small business segment as well. And you run into some implementation details around exactly how you define the small business segment. But I think those issues can be worked through. So I agree with Chris.
And at the risk of it being agreeable, I agree that small commercial customers should be also included. Any customer group that is not likely to be approached on a one-to-one basis should have the opportunity to get to a competitive supplier. And we think that the size will vary from EDC to EDC, but at the end of the day, we think they should have the same opportunity.
And I guess I'll follow up with one question, and it relates in a roundabout way to customer referral programs. We're hearing anecdotally that a wires and poles customer will call in to get a meter read, and one of your affiliates will be, as you're ready to sign the term sheet to go with the XYZ generation supplier, we're finding out in some cases that the incumbent wires and poles companies non-regulated entity is showing up at the door saying, can I get a last look and see at that term sheet? I just throw that out. It's totally a divergence from the discussion here today, but I want to speak to the issue, and I'll let Chris from Direct Energy. Are you hearing that? We've heard from Constellation about it being done, and I just want to say there's zero tolerance for that from my colleagues and I as we talk about codes of conduct issues.
We've definitely heard that. It's a very difficult issue because it's one thing to design an appropriate code of conduct, and it's also one thing to enforce various aspects of it. Some of them are easy, transfer pricing. The prohibition on that kind of information sharing is extremely difficult to police. And we have definitely anecdotally within our company, we've heard those reports. And as I think at least a couple of people have internally characterized it, it's from people who seem genuinely surprised at it. It's not necessarily the people where you might take what they're saying with a grain of salt because you feel like they might be puffing a bit. It's people who really seem genuinely surprised when it happens. And I'm not sure that there's any magic bullet for getting at it because it's the kind of communication that could be very difficult to track. But I think it's one of the things that we appreciate the question because it's certainly something that I think a number of us have seen, and we're not sure what to do about it.
Anybody else want to comment on that?
Chairman, I'd just say that we have a very strict code of conduct, and our affiliate EGS has no information about data requests or customer requests that come in through other EGSs.
Okay. Well, that concludes our customer referral program panel. I want to again thank you for your excellent presentations, and now I'd call on a retail opt-in auction. Michael Meath, Paul Hibbard, and Tony Banks.